Good afternoon. Today it's my great pleasure to introduce Professor Wayne Luke. Wayne is a professor of computer engineering at the Imperial College London. His research covers the development of hardware and software capabilities to address demanding applications such as genomic data processing and climate modeling. He's a fellow of the Royal Academy of Engineering, the IEEE, and BCS. So, with that, Wayne, please.
Thank you very much, Ken, for that very generous introduction. I am extremely pleased to have the opportunity to give this talk. This, I think, is probably my second time, and I hope I'm not saying the same thing as what I did maybe 5 or 10 years ago whenever I came last time. And I very much thank Ken to take the time out that despite all the hustle and effort running the ASAP conference, he still managed to arrange for this visit, which I'm extremely grateful. So this is a talk about how to exploit reconfigurable technology to accelerate genomic data processing. Much of the work has actually been done by my PhD student, James Aaron. And there are also other collaborators as well, which I will explain in a minute. But just in case you haven't been to Imperial College, this is a photograph of the main campus of Imperial College. So I'm based in the Department of Computing, which is over there. And I work very closely with my colleagues in the Department of Electrical and Electronic Engineering, which is this tall building around there. And there are well-known landmarks, such as the Natural History Museum, or if you don't want to look at dinosaurs, then have a look at the Babbage early computing machine in the Science Museum. We might just want to walk around in the Kensington Gardens or the Hyde Park around there. And Imperial College is easy to recognize because it has this tower, which is called, like so many things in England, named after the Queen. So this is called the Queen's Tower. So next time when you have a chance to fly into London, my suggestion is to try to sit on the right-hand side. Because I took this picture from the plane, you could see part of the wing over here. But left-hand side is relatively boring, so sit on the right-hand side. Just have a quick description of our research team at Imperial College. So we have quite a diverse range of research interests. Covering from applications to design techniques and tools for systems that can be customized. Okay? So obviously software can be customized, but because we also target reconfigurable technology, therefore quite a bit of the hardware can also be customized as well. And that really makes this research so exciting. So our focus is on improving the efficiency of the design, so how to develop customization to make the implementation more effective and efficient, and then at the same time, how to improve the productivity of the designers. Okay? Now, and designers could be at different levels, from application builders to design tool developers, to library developers, to platform and infrastructure development, and so on. And our work actually cover both high-performance computing as well as embedded systems, which I'll give some examples in a minute. So our team actually spent two departments. I lead the team in computing department, and we have around six research associates. So these are typically postdoctoral researchers, and around 10 PhD students in various stages of completion. And then we have somewhere between 3 to 6 MSc students, undergraduate students, depending on a particular year. So we also have about 2 to 3 visiting students from different universities around the world. And we love to collaborate with them. And over in the Department of Electrical and Electronic Engineering, there are another 30 to 40 researchers. So together, we actually have quite a big team. And we cover both theoretical foundation as well as practical applications. And indeed, I think it's really that coverage, that interaction between foundational and practical concerns that makes this field so exciting. So we have, as I already mentioned, collaboration with many universities like Cambridge, Oxford, Fudan in China, and Princeton and Stanford in the United States, and also Sydney in Australia. And we also have a lot of industrial collaborators, and Microsoft is actually one of them, I'm delighted to say. So we have various projects. The FP7, these are the European Union projects. So these are the project acronyms. And when, if I have time, I could describe some of these in a bit more detail. The one we are running right now involving European colleagues is one based on the Horizon 2020 framework, and the acronym for that project is called EXTRA, and it is actually looking at how to exploit reconfigurable technology for exascale capability in the future. And then EPSLC is the UK grant agency, so that corresponds to the National Science Foundation in the US. And we have various kinds of projects supported by them as well. So just to give a few examples about the type of applications that we look at. So for example, we study climate modeling and some of these applications, we could get more than 10 times faster. For genomics, I'll describe a bit more later on. We also have done quite a bit of research on accelerating financial modeling. And then we also have some work on avionics monitoring, which I'll describe a little bit more in a minute. So some recent advances is we are just begin to start a new project sponsored by Intel on looking at accelerators for cloud computing, in particular how to manage virtualizations and elastic resources and so on. And applications could involve genomics and also finance. And we also have research on automating the development of designs that can reconfigure at runtime in order to improve the performance or improve the energy efficiency. And that is one of the European project, the project EXTRA that I mentioned briefly before. And one of these mechanisms for automation is to eliminate idle resources. Again, if you are interested, let me know, because we already have some publications. We also are interested in looking at new FPGA fabric. So again, as part of this European project, that we studied new ways of enhancing the fabric so that we could optimize dynamic data access for applications such as man cache, sparse matrix vector computation, sorting, and so on. And then, hardly surprising, that we also have quite a bit of effort on machine learning and indeed the interaction between machine learning and reconfigurable design. And that piece of work involved a UK company called Maxella. And here we look at how, well, what most of the current effort has been on how to make use of reconfigurable technology, FPGAs and so on, to accelerate machine learning. But in addition, we're also interested in using machine learning ideas to improve or to optimize reconfigurable design as well. So I think there are interesting interaction between these two areas. And then last but not the least, that we also have projects involving Airbus that for designs that could be self-adaptive in order to develop a new generation of avionics instruments so that they have better monitoring about their own behavior, so that if something goes wrong, then the instrument would know that, you know, don't believe this reading because perhaps something is not right. So we include the monitoring support facilities in a circuit itself. So it has actually become part of the hardware. And we could monitor not just the performance or functional properties, but also monitor the temporal as well as statistical properties and so on, like looking at the mean and variance of various output samples. Now, in the longer term, what we hope to do is to understand the principles of compiling from a high-level description, which could be domain-specific, sorry, could be MATLAB or Java or whatever the appropriate higher-level description, and how it could be optimized by what I just put there as a compiler, but it could be multiple stages of optimization, and generate code for both fixed processor, so this could be the usual conventional processors, as well as customizable processors such as FPGAs and so on. And increasingly, we are not just looking at what looks like a top-down flow, but also a bottom-up flow as well. So it's really it's an interaction between the compilation from the top-down, but also analyzing the compiled code, and some of that could be at runtime as well, so that the results could be fed back to the compiler or to the runtime system in order to provide not just more optimized implementation, but also more secure and more robust implementations. So in case there might be faults or other issues at runtime. Okay, but that would be a long-term effort that we hope to achieve in the future. Okay, so I'll just going to spend a few minutes describing the background of the topic of today, which is genomic data processing. So this is quite a well-known figure that you might have seen before, that the sequencing of genomic data started quite a while ago with Frederick Sanger. Oops. And that is where he got the Nobel Prize many years ago. But a lot of that work has been manual, and even the initial machines are not very producing a lot of information. So it's only in the more recent times, and I'll show you the timeline in the next slide, that what's now known as the next generation sequencing, that these sort of machines can really produce a significant amount of information of the genome. And that really revolutionized the healthcare area. And if we have a look at the timeline, one could see that, I guess the interesting comparison is with the well-known Moore's Law, as we all know that in computing, that when we have the older technology, then you'll see that the increase in information, you could see that compared with Moore's Law, the slope is not as steep. Okay, and then it's around 2004, 2005 time, at that time, that new generation sequencing capability has come into play. And then you could see that suddenly the slope become a lot more steeper. Okay, and the interesting thing is that if we compare that with Moore's Law, the old technology is not increasing as quick as Moore's Law, and therefore that hasn't been a big problem for storing the genomic information. But now, since the genomic capability, the processing is producing so much information, then whereas Moore's Law is increasing at a lower rate, if you talk to genomics researchers, a lot of them are saying that they need to spend an increasing amount of money to just buying storage to store what they process. Okay, so that is actually one of the motivation of our compression work that I'll explain in a minute. Okay, so the two major challenges are first, how to efficiently analyze the genomics data, okay? And a lot of the bottlenecks are actually in the actual genomics pipeline, and I'll explain one of those in a minute. And then the second challenge is how to efficiently store the data. Again, there are obviously existing general purpose methods like GSIP that many have used before. But those general purpose techniques may not be the most effective, and I'll explain that in a minute. So how do we apply this compression capability? And indeed, there is this method called reference-based compression, so that we compress the genome with a reference genome, so that because one has found that the differences between different genomes are very small, okay? Because genomes themselves are very large, so although there might be lots of differences, but in the whole picture, it's actually very small. So the idea is one could find where the differences are and then just compress the differences, right? So it's pretty obvious. If we do that, then we could have very high compression ratio, but it is quite slow. Okay, so how can we speed it up while retaining the high compression ratio? So that is the challenge. Okay. So the technology we use is called FPGA, programmable gate arrays. And in particular, the system that I'll describe today is based on a UK company called Maxella. So they call it a Maxella data flow engine. And the basic computational element is an Altera Stratix 5 FPGA. And also the card has 48 gigabyte of DRAM. Okay, and later on we'll compare the performance of that with Intel CPUs and also NVIDIA GPUs. Okay, we are computer engineers, so we really don't know very much about genomics. So it is our great fortune that we are able to collaborate with some of the best researchers in the world on genomics. And they are Professor Dennis Low and Professor Rosa Chiu at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. And their work actually provide the foundation of a lot of the advances that I'm going to describe. So they've done the basic scientific underpinning that could support non-invasive prenatal cancer and transplantation assessment. I'll explain a little bit of that in a minute. Okay, and then we also work closely with Professor Jiang in the same group, and he has developed a particular genomic data processing pipeline called the MEFIPipe that we map and accelerate using FPGAs. Okay, so this is a diagram that I borrow from Professor Lowe's paper, and the technology is very much based on this idea of what is known in genomic terms called methylation. Okay, and to give the simplest possible explanation, by looking at the plasma in the blood, one could actually find information by genomic sequencing of the whole genome so that we could obtain information of the healthiness of the different organs in the human body. Okay, so the exciting thing is that this would provide information not for just one particular organ, but it could provide information about the liver, the lymphocytes, the placenta, and so on. Okay, so in other words, by analyzing the information in the blood plasma and by this whole genome sequencing, one could provide analysis technique. One could predict the healthiness of fetus and or unborn babies, for example, that would be for prenatal testing. Okay, but the exciting thing is that the procedure can be used not just for prenatal testing. Although, if you only do prenatal testing, that's already an amazing advance. But it's not limited to that. The same procedure could be used for detecting and monitoring cancer. Could be used to monitor organ transplantation and so on. Okay, so this is an amazing technique. And the interesting thing is one of the bottlenecks is actually in the sequencing, and that's the bit that we try to accelerate. But just to provide a feel for the practicality of this method, that around 2 years ago that the BBC News explained that it's around one in every 200 women might lose her baby after a particular situation because when we do the prenatal testing, it used to be invasive. So when some of the fluid is being extracted, that might actually have hurtful effects on both the mother and her baby. So the technique that I just described before is non-invasive because all you need to do is just to do a blood test. Okay, so one could extract the blood plasma and do genomic analysis on the blood plasma in order to find out whether there are genetic abnormalities of the baby. So it is found that the number of invasive tests can be reduced by more than 80%. Okay, so and therefore the risk of damaging the mother and the baby would be significantly reduced. And then just last week that there's another piece of news that the UK Health Authority, the National Health Service, NHS, the chief medical officer in the UK said that increasingly, these sort of genomic techniques should be applied to, for example, monitoring and testing whether patients might likely to have cancer, for example. So instead of just waiting until the symptoms become severe, if there is an easy way by just doing the blood testing, one could actually monitor whether there are possibilities that one might get cancer. One might be able to protect the population much better, but also at a lower cost, because we try to prevent that rather than try to cure it. Okay, so this sort of techniques should become increasingly important. That sort of information would be obtained by this bioinformatics pipeline. This is a technique developed by Professor Zhang, and that involves this capability called the whole genome bisulfite sequencing. And again, I won't go into details, but is try to align the genomic information, the genome, from a patient with a reference genome which is known to be healthy. Okay, and I'll show it in a minute to give you a feel for what that process is like. Okay, part of that is called short read mapping, because the genomics machine break down the patient's genome into small pieces. So it's somewhere between 50 to 100 characters, and we need to match that against a 3 billion character of a human genome. Okay, so this is the reference genome, which should be from a healthy person. And then these are the fragments of the genome from the patient, and we try to check what are the differences between the patient's genome and the reference genome. Okay. Now, when there are differences, it might not always be a real difference. So, for example, you could imagine in this case, we match that against that, and we say, well, that should be an A in here, but it's a G, right? Now, but because there are other fragments that we check to show that it could be an A as well, now that could be an odd one out. So therefore, this is likely to be an error of the sequencing machine rather than a real difference, for example, okay? Now, in another case, when all the short read fragments, all have the same character, which is different from the reference genome, then there is a high probability that the patient's genome is really different from the reference genome. Okay, so that shows that it's likely that this is a genetic diversity. Now, in some cases, it might not matter too much, but in other cases, that could be related to some recognized diseases, genetic diseases that one need to be aware of. Okay. Now a lot of existing software tools exist. So some of them are called Bowtie, SOAP3, and so on. But because the genetic machine and so on, they produce so much information, all these short reads and so on. So it would be 300 million or even more. Then it often takes hours to process, even on the most powerful machines. Okay. So what we aim to do is to accelerate this alignment of these short read fragments against the reference genome. So, for example, in Professor Lowe's university, that they have one of the most powerful machines. It could take more than 5 hours on a 24-thread Xeon system and so on. So what we hope to do is actually to overcome drawback of previous accelerators. So for example, they might not have the same functionality as the software version. And then some of them, they might have the function, but then they might not have the accuracy. They might not provide the same result compared with the software. Okay. So what we hope to do is not only provide the speed, but also make sure that the result, the functionality, would be almost identical as the software version. Okay. So again, something that we do, which is slightly different, is that a lot of existing work is based on a well-known technique called Smith-Waterman method. But we found that the Smith-Waterman method has some drawback, which I'll explain a bit later on. So we make use of a particular data structure called FM-index, which is essentially a compressed substring index that allows us to very quickly search for substring in a big string. And that this particular index is constructed by a technique called the Burroughs-Wheeler transform. Now again, if you haven't come across that, do not worry, because you could just do a Wikipedia and then quickly explain to you what it does. Now there are various parameters required. So for example, we do short width of up to 200 base pairs. And our work right now allows up to 2 mismatches, but we could actually support as many as 1 lines. And then we also extended this FM index technique, which was a exact match technique, to support approximate alignment as well. So we could do search from both ends, so we could do a bidirectional search. And we could also use backtracking to test all the possible permutations that could happen. Okay, so in our accelerator, we develop modules which could do exact match, and then we also develop modules that could do either matching with 1 mismatch or 2 mismatches, and so on. Okay. And then what we do, and again, that is something that we learn from our genomics research colleagues, that most of the matches, for example, up to 60 to 80%, would actually be exact match. Okay, so you could imagine what we'll do is we will stream the short reads through these different elements. And then for those which already have match, then exact match, then we don't need to pass them to do the approximate match and so on. So the amount of unmatched short reads from here could be relatively small. And that could be one way of making things faster. So in addition, we also make various optimizations, such as make sure that the FM index structure is optimized to make sure that we could saturate the memory bandwidth. Okay, so the only thing that stops us from running faster is the memory speed. Okay, so if you have faster memory, then we could actually run this even faster. And we also have various optimizations to reduce the access to the DRAM, because we did the big DRAM on the board in order to store the reference genome. And then another possibility is actually to exploit runtime reconfiguration, because what we can do is that in the beginning, we could configure the whole chip to just do the exact matching, because the exact match modules are relatively small, so we could put more on them, and we could increase the parallelism as much as we can, as long as we could support the memory bandwidth. And then later on, when we have done all the exact matches, then we could reconfigure the chip to do the approximate match for one element and also and then for two mismatches and so on. So these approximate match modules are typically a bit bigger and take a bit more time, but because there are fewer sequences that we need to do the approximate matching, and therefore it doesn't matter that they're a bit bigger. Okay, so the difference is if we do a Smith-Waterman, they use the same module for both exact match and approximate match. Okay, so that means that potentially the number of Smith-Waterman modules that you could put on an FPGA would be smaller, right? Because the exact match module is smaller than the approximate match elements. Okay, so by exploiting that information that there are more exact matches than approximate matches, we could actually organize our data flow in order to accelerate the computation even more. Okay, so the evaluation, as I mentioned, is based on a system from Maxella, and the comparison are GPUs from NVIDIA and CPU from Intel. And some examples are from this public domain genomics database. And from our colleagues in genomics, they said they are happy to find up to two mismatches. And we could locate all the hits and in a particular format and so on. And these are some of the numbers that we get, that right now our hardware accelerated version is up to 5 times faster than Bowtie 2, which is one of the software versions on the CPU. And also it is up to 4.5 times faster than the GPU on that. And more importantly, we actually achieve the same accuracy compared to the software version. Okay, and indeed, we found that right now the reported speed that I show here are actually limited by the I/O file I/O. So if we could do that faster, then we could actually speed up the whole thing even more. And then, of course, the FPGA version is over 5 times more energy efficient than the software version. Okay, and what I'll do in the next few minutes is to describe how we could, in addition, also apply acceleration to accelerate the compression of genomics data. Okay, and this method is based on a reference oriented technique. So for example, we are compressing these data, okay? Remember, these are the short read fragments against a reference genome like that, okay? So for example, for this particular sequence, the compressed version looks like this. Where the first number corresponds to where the match occurs. So you could see that it's AATGG. So this is, it matches the first five characters in the reference genome, okay? So it starts from the position zero because it starts from the first one. And there are five characters that match, so that is five there. And then the first one that doesn't match, we put it at the last element here. Okay, so the first one is A that doesn't match the reference genome. And then we could use the same idea, for example, to compress this particular segment into these two triples and so on. Okay, so so this task actually turns out to be pretty similar to the sequence alignment, and we actually use the same hardware in order to accelerate that. And we could compare that against some of the software method that I'll mention in a minute. Okay. So there are actually two well-known formats. One is called FASTA, the other one is called FASTQ. So the FASTA format, our accelerated version is called FASTA SIP. And this, the FASTA format corresponds to preassembled genomes, which are already mostly in order and so on. And we could merge the adjacent ones to improve compression ratio even more. FASTQ is another format and is sequence data from either strand of the DNA. And we could actually also map the reverse complements to, again, these are some techniques that, is well known, but if you're interested, we could get back to that later on. Okay? So the overall organization of the computation is like this, that there in the file format for this genomic sequence, there are all these identifiers and so on, which will just compress using software. And then the actual content of the sequences, and so turning this sequence data into the three tuples that I showed before, that part is being accelerated using the hardware that I showed before. And then the result of that can be further compressed in order to find the, final results that, I show here. Okay. So what I showed before is the FASTA SIP. So this is a FASTA format. The FASTQ format is roughly the same, except that they have, in addition to the identifier, they also have strand information, they have quality scores, and so on. These are all compressed by software separately. And right now, we are just compressing the actual sequence data over there. Okay. So again, these are just the hardware system and the software system that, we use in our evaluation. And the FASTA format, we, use the actual human genome data using human genome build 38. So there are different builds. And then for the FASTQ format, then we use a different set of public data. Okay. So this is this table describes the results of accelerating the FASTA computation, and essentially that one could get speed up of up to 12 times of the best of the software version. And then the compression time, compression ratio could be 12 times more, and the compression time is comparable to, the best as well. And then for the compression time of the accelerated version, for the faster SIP, it is right now is two times the speed of software version. But that's because it is limited by the file I/O. So we hope that we have the next generation of system that would allow us to overcome that. And then for the FASTQ format, that the compression ratio could be similar to the software version, but then the compression time could be more than 20 times faster. Okay. And then again, some of the hardware version is limited by the file I/O right now. Some of the compression time is less, but then we still have high compression ratio of some of the best software compression techniques. Okay, so this method has potential of not just accelerating the speed, but also it could actually give better compression results as well. Okay. Okay. So right now there are a number of possibilities for further improvement. Like we are working with the Francis Crick Institute, which is the new genomics institute in London, which we will port our hardware design to different kinds of hardware platforms in order to get hopefully better results. We are also testing our design on more data sets. And also, we are interested in accelerating other stages of genomics pipeline. Because right now, our focus is really on this particular part in the middle, which involves alignment and discovering variation in the genomic sequences. There are other parts of the genomics pipeline, for example, how to do functional predictions, how to do, for example, RNA sequencing and so on, which we are not doing right now, but we think a lot of the technique that we're looking at can also be applied to that. So that we hope would become future work. And then in addition, we also hope to automate the production of these optimized pipelines so that they could become useful both for scientific research to discover genomic diseases or cure of those. And also we hope that the acceleration would also benefit healthcare and clinical applications so that in new generation of hospital machines, that could benefit from techniques that we describe here so that we could have better compression at a higher speed and so on. Okay, so thank you very much.
Could you go back to slide number 30?
Sure.
So is there any, could you give a little bit of some intuition as to why the compression ratio is so much higher for the hardware implementations than the software implementations?
Okay. The some of the software, those are for general purpose compression. Okay, so those are not reference based. Okay, I mean, so those are essentially variations of SIP or GSIP and so on. So they could compress sort of everything, but in terms of the genome, they don't exploit the specific structure of the genome. Whereas in the reference based compression, as I mentioned, is there is a reference that we compare against, so that we only need to basically find out what the differences are and then compress the differences.
So isn't this a little bit of an apples and oranges comparison then? Couldn't you run the same algorithm, whatever you're running in hardware and software?
We also do the, for example, V1 is in software. It's what we did. It's our own version in software. V2 is in hardware. Okay. Sorry that I didn't make it clear in here, but yeah. Okay. So that shows that our you can see the compression ratio of the software and hardware is the same. Yeah. And the hardware is slightly faster. But we think that there are still scope for improving the speed of the hardware, because right now is the file I/O, because they are storing in the disk and so on. We spend most of the time taking the thing from the disk. So if we have much faster I/O and so on, or put it in the cache or whatever, then that ought to be a lot faster. So
the machine that this was running on had how much DRAM?
The hardware board has 48 gigabytes of DRAM. Software, I think, is tons right now.
But, and that's not 48 gigabytes isn't sufficient to hold all of the files. It's larger than 48 gigabytes.
Oh, no, the 48 is storing the reference genome, right? But the patient, they got 300 million, so on, right? You know, so we'll need to get the data to be matched externally. Yeah. So the DRAM only contain the reference which we sort of match against, because the on-chip RAM is not big enough to store the reference genome is not big enough. So
are you looking at doing the compression part on the FPGA.
Yes.
So that's what's making it faster.
So just to make it absolutely clear, that it is the the genomic data format contain the headers and strain formation and quality score and so on. So we are only accelerating the actual sequence data, right? Now, in principle, we probably could also accelerate these other bits as well, but they are not as big. So right now, we sort of did not accelerate them. But in principle, we probably could have accelerated everything if all the bandwidth and all that could support that.
Do you guys have like the logic backends? Like, are those public for these, or are they like kept secret?
We are evaluating them with the UK National Health Service and all that. So I imagine when we are sure that everything we are doing is appropriate, we'll find a way to make sure it will benefit the whole world. I mean, it's no point to keep it a secret. Okay. So yeah. So I think eventually we definitely hope to put it in the public domain or whatever is the appropriate way to benefit. I mean, it's such an important area, right? So.
Like you mentioned that there are like 31,000 patients whose genomic sequencing has already been done by the NHS in the beginning of this slide. So is that public? Like, can someone go and like do stuff with
it? I think that is a piece of news I got from a news website.
Okay.
I think patient data are extremely sensitive. So I think you need to sign so many piece of paper, and you probably could only do work inside that secure database or something like that.
Because sometimes they like release it to the public with like encrypted, like they remove the patient's names and just like give you the data to work with it.
Yes, I think there are possibilities, and indeed right now there are also some sort of real public domain information, but I think some of the existing sort of large patient database seem to have various restrictions that I think they will allow scientific research to access that, but there are all sorts of restrictions and so on, you know. And in fact, I think very recently there's a case in a newspaper that Google DeepMind was in the news because I think one of the hospitals or somebody who has the patient information sort of provide that data to them for testing the algorithms. But then it was sort of being challenged legally that is not completely properly and so on. So I think this is an area that we learn to be very careful. Yes.
Unfortunately, we're losing the room, so
okay,
we have to take any other questions.
Offline, yes. Okay, great. Thank you very much. Thank you.